From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Rosie Brennan is making history along with her teammates. Those are women on the U.S. cross-country ski team who have dominated this season's World Cup. Now, especially in a sport that's normally ruled by the Scandinavians, Rosie joined me to describe in depth how they've done it. Rosie was born and raised here in Park City, and I'm so pleased that she could take some time to sit down and chat with us. Rosie Brennan, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me.
I guess the obvious question to start with is just how does it feel to literally be making history over there in Europe as a U.S. women's cross-country ski team member?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting because, you know, I have been part of this team for a while, so I certainly have watched a lot of history happen between Keegan and Jesse and Sadie. And I've always just been like kind of below them, which of course, like I feel part of it because I train with them and I, you know, I've helped made them better in my own ways. But I've never really been on the headline of it. So it's been really special to kind of make my mark and find my place in the history and have my name kind of put down in there. So that's been really special and unique. And it's just, I think it really speaks to our team too, because we do just keep bringing more people into it. Like there's not just one person that's written all the history for us, you know, like it started with Keegan and then Jesse and then Sadie. And then I was in there and then Haley got in there too with me. And the world junior kids have been, you know, setting records right and left too. So it's really cool to see it just spread so quickly, honestly.
Right. And I know that you're going to say probably that there are many elements that have led to the success, especially for the women. But I remember a couple of years ago reading an article where they were talking about even possibly it's in sort of the evolution of the DNA of Norwegians, that they are just always going to win. And yet you're proving along with your team that that's not necessarily true. And so what do you think plays into this success? And, you know, the biggest thing down to the littlest thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the like kind of shrinking of the global world certainly helps. Like the information that's available to us now is so much more than, you know, maybe our predecessors in the ski world. And then especially with women's sports in specific. You know, we're learning so much more about how to train women, what women specifically need, and that they're not the same as men. And so those kinds of things have certainly helped. And just like, I mean, now they show cross-country ski races on the TV in the US, which is crazy because when I first started skiing, my coach gave me like a VHS of world championships from a few years prior. And I just had to watch it on repeat because that was the only image I had of what skiing was supposed to look like at the highest level. And, you know, now like it's on your phone every second of every day. It's like hard to get away from it. And so like certainly those things help. It makes it less of like, you know, the Norwegian secrets or whatever. Like there aren't really secrets, you know, like I can watch see what they're doing in training and skiing, like how they ski and watch videos and all that kind of thing. But then also just, I mean, maybe it's luck. Maybe it's just the nature of the type of people the sport attracts. I'm not really sure, but for whatever reason, the group that we have mounted, you know, kind of starting with Keegan and moving forward is just been a group that really works well together and has always pushed each other and has really valued that team aspect. And that's, I mean, now I hope it's just something that like is expected of people when they come on our team and that it, you know, will carry through for generations to come. But, you know, not every team is like that. And I mean, we see that with some of our international counterparts, some of the teams I'm very glad I'm not on, you know, it's a special thing to have a team that really connects that way.
Yeah, it's really, really evident when you see any finish or any podium that your team is just, and even, even the, with the jitters in the start line, when the camera goes and focuses on you and your teammates, you all have this kind of light, these smiles, and this kind of joyous seeming attitude about being on the starting line, which can never be that much fun to be on. So it really, really shines through. Talk a little bit about, you know, you born and bred here in Park City, and although cross-country skiing, I would say in the last 10 years in Park City has completely, like, has blown up and it's so popular. Still, it's not a real cross-country ski mecca. I'm sure that our 2002 Olympics, Winter Olympics, and with the cross-country venue over in Soldier Hollow, that kind of, you know, got it going, probably got you going a lot. But what is the difference between growing up in Park City doing it versus, you know, like Jesse Diggins being from Minnesota, where that's kind of a main sport growing up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, because it's not a big sport, and particularly when I was younger, I didn't actually start cross-country skiing until I was 14. And, you know, I think I learned to alpine ski when I was 3 or 4, when every kid in Park City learns to alpine ski, but I never raced. It just, I don't know, it didn't attract me. It wasn't really my thing. And eventually in middle school, I kind of found myself in a place where I was energetic. So I think I was driving my mother nuts. And so her kind of one rule was like, I don't care what activity you pick, but you have to find an activity. And I, you know, like, especially after the 2002 Olympics, there were a lot of opportunities to try every sport. So I did kind of try it. Like, I tried skeleton for a little bit, and, you know, kind of did some of those unique things that, like, we were privy to having had the Olympics. But eventually my mom convinced me to try cross-country skiing. And so I went to one of the team practices when I was in eighth grade, and I was like so far behind everyone, but I don't know what it was. I just loved it. And we were only dryland training at that point, so I hadn't even put skis on my feet, but I was like, I don't know, I like this. I think it was that I could see a path to improvement. Like, it was I could see very directly that if I kept working at it, like, I would get fitter and I would learn and I would improve. And of course that's true with every sport, but, like, I don't know, just my personality and the way I work, the kind of like endurance sport aspect, like, just really clicked. And then of course living in a winter place, it's more fun to have skis on your feet. So that was kind of what really clicked with me. But it's what's been really interesting is like seeing the trend, like you mentioned, the evolution of cross-country skiing in Park City. I mean, when I started skiing, I only had white pine, which has pretty limited terrain. Then for like summer training for roller skiing, I pretty much only roller skied in Park Meadows. There weren't that many bike paths or anything like that. And pretty much every year after that, there was more bike paths. And then, you know, they started grooming in Round Valley. At some point when I was in college, I came home and I was like, oh my goodness, what's happened? This is like incredible. And then the UOP trail got put in, and then they connected all the ones like through the neighborhoods and stuff. And so it's just like every time I come home, there's something new, and that's just like warms my heart. It's like so cool to see and see how many people are out there giving the sport a try. But I think what's mostly unique about being from Park City is that just like the high level of athletes that live there and like retire there and are young athletes that are training there. So like, you know, being an Olympian is like not that special. Like, compare, you know, it's like your next door neighbor probably also is one, you know. Yeah, it's like kind exactly. of that way. And that's maybe what's unique compared to like some of my teammates who grew up in other places where like being an Olympian is like you're the only one in your whole town. So that's kind of been interesting, but also like really special. You know, I had so many role models growing up, and so it's special.
Yeah. Yes, there are a lot of Olympians in this town, but for what you are doing, cross-country skiing, let's talk through all of your results so far this year. When I started hearing about what you were doing, you had double back-to-back World Cup wins. You were at the top of the podium, and that was in what, December, right? Yes. And so start there. Like, were you just amazed and surprised that you were out there? Did you go into any of those either of those races thinking, oh yeah, I'm a front runner, I'm a contender?
Yeah, You know, this year has been so interesting because I mean, for most of the summer, we didn't know if we were going to have a season or what that season was going to look like. And then once we did find out we were having a season, they didn't change any of the schedules. And so I honestly wasn't sure if I was going to come because I didn't know if I felt comfortable enough or like safe enough with what the protocols they had provided. And so it honestly wasn't until like 3 or 4 days before I left that I made the final call to come. And so at that point, like, I don't even think I was like focused that much on the results because I was just like, okay, like I got to just get into race mode. Like, here we go. Like I got to make the most of this. Like, cause who knows if our, you know, if this fails, like our season's going to get canceled. You know, I might only have one race. So like, who knows what's going to happen. So that's kind of like what it was like for, oh, sorry, boyfriend calling. That's kind of what it was like for a little while there. And then, you know, I knew I was in really good shape. I had a really good summer of training and we had done some like practice races and stuff that, you know, let me know that I was in good shape. And so it was actually like the last race in Ruka, which was our first weekend. It was a pursuit race, but I had the third fastest time of day there, which was, I mean, it depends on like technically how you count podiums, but that was my first time being anywhere near a podium. So at that point I was like, okay, I think like I'm actually in quite good shape and like, you know, maybe I can make something of the season. And so then when we flew down to Switzerland, that's at altitude, which I feel much more comfortable at than a lot of people having grown up in Park City. Mm-hmm. I know what that feels like. And that course has been really good to me in the past. So I did kind of have, I mean, even back in May when I was like looking at the season, that particular, the 10K in particular was a race that I had my sights on for like a race that I thought I could do really well in. And so
that was Davos, right?
In Davos. Yeah. Sprint on the other hand was like, I don't know. I mean, I honestly only did the sprint because we hadn't had that many races to that point, and it seemed like a good way to kind of like get the jitters out and get some races in. And it was like a good way to warm up for the 10K, but sprinting, like, I mean, it hasn't been like my best event. And so when I like learned that I had won the qualifier, I actually thought they had messed up the timing. I'm like, no, like, I don't think so. And then I'm like, well, whatever. I'll like, you know, we get a little break then. And so I like went and rested and then you like come back for the rounds. And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, we'll just see what happens. And then like, I realized that not only did I have the speed, but like for whatever reason, my skills and like my tactics in the race were like way better than I thought they were. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, we'll just like keep seeing where this goes. So you just keep going through each round. And by the time we got to the final, like I'd never been in a final before. So like at that point I'd already met all my goals. So I'm like, well, okay, we'll just like, you know, see what's left in the tank. And it was a 2-lap course. And so like on the second lap going up the hill, I was like, well, now or never, like you might as well leave it all out there. So I just like went for it. And I took the lead, which into a downhill is always risky because there's a draft. And so then, and my finish sprint isn't necessarily my strongest thing. So I'm just like going down the lines, like, oh my gosh, like just keep going, like, and looking like either way to see if there were like ski tips coming up beside me. And like finally I could see the line and there weren't. And I was like, wow, okay, this is insane. So that one was like, I absolutely surprised myself in every way imaginable. And like, I just like couldn't believe that I'd won a sprint for my first World Cup win. Like it was just, that was like totally wild. And the day, like, you know, you have anti-doping and all this stuff afterwards. Like I didn't even have time really to get nervous for the next day because there just was no time. Like I got home, ate dinner, went to bed, and then like woke up and raced the next day. And you know, I had so much more confidence in to begin with. So it was just kind of like following through with the plan, and I, you know, knew I was skiing really well. So that one kind of was more of like a relief feeling than like a shock feeling. But then at that point I had all 3 bibs, which was just like, I mean, I never in my wildest dreams imagined I would wear a single one of those bibs, let alone all 3 at the same time. So that was kind of like a wild and surreal just weekend as a whole.
So the 2 bibs from first the sprint, and the sprint is again, how long, how far?
It was like 1.2 kilometers.
Oh, that sounds so painful. And then the second was the 10K. And that one was, I forget, was it a pursuit or a regular start?
It was an interval start.
An interval start. Okay. And then the third bib is that you're the overall World Cup leader at that point.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Crazy. So this is where you are going into the Tour de Ski. And for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with the Tour de Ski, I mean, I just describe it as this 6-day super grueling stage race that's both in Switzerland and Italy. And the final stage has a climb that's like 44% grade, which is incredible. Like you wouldn't even, you know, that's really steep to even ski down on your alpine skis, let alone race uphill. So maybe you can add what the Tour de Ski really is.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a little different every year. They change the venues and the stages and the number of days and all those things. So this year we had 8 races in 10 days. So there's 2 off days and 3 different venues, 2 different countries. And yeah, the last day you race up an alpine area. So it's a pretty unique event because you have to do all the events, sprint and distance, skate and classic. You can't skip any of them. It's like cumulative time, the same as like the Tour de France or something like that. And so you're really just trying to make the most of every day and kind of minimize losses on the days that you aren't feeling as good. Because, you know, I mean, if there's one thing I learned from tour racing, you don't feel great every day. That's one thing you can count on. So yeah, it's a really unique and really cool event.
In a nutshell, you go into it as the leader, and we know that your teammates, especially Jesse Diggins, are going to have great performances. Jesse had had some historic finishes in that race the previous year. Again, it's sort of 2 days back to back where you guys end up finishing Jesse first, you second. Yeah, what do you want to say about those finishes? It's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the beginning of the tour was, again, at altitude, so I think I had a little bit of an advantage there and felt a little more comfortable there. And so each day just kind of, like, was ticking by, and I was, you know, holding my own. And, okay, like, maybe, you know, Dallas wasn't a fluke. Like, I'm still in this game. And then on the third day, yeah, Jesse and I kind of, it was a pursuit start, so we ended up skiing together. And we kind of did a 1-2 attack at the end, and then ended up finishing first and second in that race, which was the first time that American women have ever gone 1-2 in a race. So that was really just like crazy exciting and like put us in 1-2 in the overall in the tour. So it was just like all of a sudden, boom, there we were. And yeah, it was kind of wild. And then, you know, the next day after the race, we drove to the next venue and we had our first day off the next day. And then there was another, it was a 10K interval start, which that was the event that I had won in Davos. So I knew that was like, you know, a really good event for me. So I really wanted to make the most of that for the tour as a whole. So I felt like I had a great race and I felt really strong about like my skiing around the whole course. So I was psyched when I came in as the leader, and then Jesse came in and beat me. And I'm like, how can she ski that fast? Like I was going as fast as I could. But it was like, you know, just so cool to like have that happen again. Like, whoa, okay, this is crazy. Like also not a fluke. Like we are, you know, doing this. And I had so many people write me and be like, I had to reload the results to make sure it was the right race. Cause like that you made sure you like did it again. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's good. Okay. I'm cool with that. So yeah, it was a pretty exciting way to start off the tour.
Oh, that's amazing. And at this point, you're in Northern Italy in Toblach or Dobbiaco, however you say it, depending on your language. And it's in the Northern Dolomites. It's just gorgeous. One of the most gorgeous places on earth, I guess. But for you, it might not matter that much because really you're just looking at the track, right?
No, it was actually like killing me because they have had an epic snow year and they had so much snow and like, we're there for so little that like we really only ski the race course, and there were like, you know, they have so many other beautiful trails, and I was just like, oh god, it's like killing me not to go like just ski everywhere right now. It is gorgeous there.
And that is actually one of the great spectator things. It's much like watching the Tour de France, you know, the biking in the summer. It's really fun to watch just to see the towns that they go through. Mm-hmm. And I find that the same way with watching cross-country skiing. The European cross-country skiing is just so amazing, and it goes by these cute little huts and, you know, through the towns, and it's it's really quite something. So it must be so fun to ski there.
It is, yeah.
So then you went from, this wonderful standing. Jesse ends up winning the Tour de Ski. You end up sixth place. That is in part due to a couple of crashes. It's a hard sport. So tell us about kind of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, in Val di Fiemme, in the 10K Classic, it was just, one of those days that, like, nothing goes as planned. And everything's kind of a little off, which, like, that happens in the Tour. And, it was, like, really early on in the race, I got, like, tripped up. And it's, like, it's a mass start. So when someone falls down, everyone just skis over the top of them. So you're, like, getting trampled. I'm like, get off of me. Like, just let me get up. So by the time I got up, I was, like, very frantic, like trying to get back to the front, but like there's so many people in the way, there's like nowhere to go. And so I didn't ski that smart. Like, I wasted a lot of energy trying to get back to the front when I maybe should have been more focused on like my overall time for the day. But there's like bonus seconds in that stage, and so I really wanted a chance at the bonus seconds. And then I was struggling with my skis, and it was really cold that day, and maybe didn't wear quite enough clothes, and just, I don't know, my body was just having a fit and didn't want to work that day. And so it was like just so challenging. And I was trying so hard the whole way, and it was just like, absolutely devastating. I was so upset after that race, and felt like I had largely given up my chances. But I feel like, if there's like one thing that I've learned through my career, it's that you can't give up. Like, you always have to like turn the page and try again the next day, because you just never know what's going to happen. And that's just like, the person I want to be in life. Like, I don't ever want to be someone that just gives up because things get tough. So I really had to like work hard to kind of like put that race aside and make the most, because we still had 2 days left, and it is a Tour, so like anything can happen. Mm-hmm. And you never know what's going to happen to the other racers too. So
exactly. A quick question about that, with so much more at stake, really, because you were one of the race leaders, when you had that, the fall and the horrible race, was it a bigger worse feeling than would it have been if you had been, in 35th place going into that race? Or does it always feel like that? It's that the high stakes of being on the podium, finishing, in the top.
Yeah, I mean, I think missing your goal, whether that's, top 30 or top 3, I think feels just as awful no matter what. I think the difference here was that I felt more like I had let a lot of people down, because mm-hmm. so many more people were like captivated and like invested in me in this race. Mm-hmm. And so that was like a little different feeling and kind of hard to deal with. And I have to say, I was like overwhelmed by the number of people that reached out and like offered support and like, expressed that they, weren't disappointed in me, and that, like these things happen and that's just life and all those things. And so that was like actually really cool to see that, people care a lot more about the results and they care who you are and how you present yourself. And so that was definitely like motivating to me to like, to be that person that doesn't give up and to like comes back fighting the next day. And that it was really brutal actually, because like our race was at, 3:45 in the afternoon, that 10K. And then the sprint the next day was at 10 a.m. So like, it wasn't even a full 24 hours that I had to clear my head. Like I had to like really kind of try to dump that race as fast as I can. Mm-hmm. Because there's another race to come. So.
Yeah. And so the next day then in the sprint.
Yeah. We had a classic sprint. And I think I ended up 12th in the day, which like having had podiums, like maybe doesn't sound that good, but it was actually a personal best for me in a classic sprint. I had never made the semis in a classic sprint. So I was really happy with that. And, Jesse and I both just missed out on the final, which was a bummer, because you get like for the sprint, cause it's a shorter event, there's like bonus seconds for the overall. Mm-hmm. And so like the higher up you place, the more bonus seconds you get. So like, I felt like, if I had just made that final, I could have gotten like, the bonus seconds that I really needed to fight back in the overall. But again, it was like a personal best. So it was hard to be like super disappointed with it. So I felt like I had at least accomplished my goal of like coming back in some sort of fighting form. Like I was at least there, even if I wasn't on the podium.
You came into the Tour de Ski wearing the yellow bib and you finished up in sixth place. It's still so amazing. And you're inspiring lots of people.
Yeah, and it's crazy, you know, like your expectations just change like so quickly. You know, you get that yellow bib and you're like, oh, I have to win everything now. But like, you know, coming into the season, my goal was a top 10 in the Tour de Ski. So like, it's been like kind of this fine balancing act of being like, well, you like more than accomplished your goal. Like you were sixth place and like you actually moved up on the last day, which is like, you know, a really big accomplishment with also this feeling of like, oh, what could have been had I not messed up on that day, you know, like, so it's like kind of this like, yeah, mind game that you have to play with yourself a little bit. But I mean, that's part of being an athlete. So it's kind of the fun part too.
Well, speaking of mind games and, you know, tactics and all that sort of thing, you're 32 years old. Well, we know that in endurance sports, a lot of times we get better as we get older to a certain point. Certainly 32 in an endurance sport is, you know, you're right in there. But you are older than a lot of the other women that you're competing against. And I'm wondering, I feel like the cognitive ability and the wisdom learned with age also really helps you in strategy, in tactics, and also in learning how to handle when there are disappointments. Is that true? Or
yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely feel like my experiences have made me, you know, maybe a smarter athlete and smarter racer. I also just think like, because I didn't start skiing till 14, like if you added up the cumulative number of kilometers that I've skied at this point in my life, it's probably the same as the 22-year-old Swede or Norwegian because they started skiing at age 2. So like at some point, I think there is just like this game of like, you need a certain number of kilometers skied to like be efficient enough to be competitive on the world stage. And so I think a lot of it for me has just been like this game of patience and like believing that, you know, I would get there in time if I just kept at it. And certainly like, yeah, like you said, with endurance sports, your fitness like does just increase. I mean, I feel way more fit than I did 3 years ago even. And just like those cumulative number of hours of training, like just, it just takes a really long time. So I don't know if it's a good sport or a bad sport to pick for that reason, but it's like, you know, it certainly has allowed me kind of freedom to do it my way and to kind of figure things out on my own path. And I think that's what's cool about it is like everyone on our team has really taken a different path. And I think that's really benefited the younger people that are coming up now because they can see there's like so many different ways to get to the end and everyone's path looks a little different. And so I think skiing's really cool that way. It's not like, you know, gymnastics where like if you haven't made it by 15, like good luck, you know? So I think it's really special. And I think it's taught me a lot in kind of having that patience with myself and sticking through some rough patches to get where I want to go.
It's so excellent. Well, based on everything you've just said in the last 2 minutes, we are going to see Rosie Brennan a lot more in the headlines. I'm so excited that I've had this chance to talk to you today. I really appreciate it. And I love that you're giving time to your hometown.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like so lucky because I mean, I'm like living and training in Anchorage for the most part now. But like, because my mom is still living in Park City, and it's still largely home, I have this like, second training base of like altitude sunshine, which Alaska doesn't always have. And so it's like this great, like, I really feel like I have the best of both worlds. Like I can just go back and forth. I mean, not this year, but hopefully in the future. And you know, the Beijing Olympics are, well, we're obviously not racing in Beijing. We're racing up at altitude. And so it's about the same altitude as Soldier Hollow. So I think I will be spending quite a bit of time there in the next year. And so I just, yeah, feel so lucky to have my, you know, my mom is like my main support. She cooks me all my meals and takes care of me when I'm training hard at home. And of course, is always cheering me on. So yeah, I feel very lucky.
And that was Park City native Rosie Brennan on the U.S. women's cross country team.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.